Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to my talk about behind the scenes of C# 5.0 and VB11 Async. I'm Bartosz Smet. I'm a developer in the SQL division, working on asynchronous event processing systems lately, reactive extensions, and some related technologies. And it turns out I've been using, you know, the C# 5 and VB11 Async stuff for quite a while now. Also happen to have written a book on C#, C# 4, which goes quite a bit behind the scenes. It's C# 4.0 Unleashed. And so maybe you were here last year when I did a talk about behind the scenes of C#, where we sort of had a look at 10 or maybe 8 or something language features, and we dove into the IL code. This is sort of the appendix to that. Like, it's the appendix of the 5.0 stuff, and instead of doing 10 language features, today we're just going to do one. Two keywords, async and await, and we're just going to spend the whole, you know, 75 minutes in Visual Studio doing some, you know, look behind the scenes how things work. Just a little warning, the booklet says it's a level 200. I don't know whether they have an implicit conversion factor for my talks or something, but, you know, this is a level 600 talk, you know. So if you want to go somewhere else, you know, feel free to stand up, you know, it's totally fine. But so, yeah, if you're still here, you know, fasten your seatbelts. And this is my only slide. It says demo. Good. Okay. Let me just try whether I can. Well, actually, that's not bother trying. I was trying to remote to that other machine, but it's not domain joined, so I'll actually type on the tablet using a real keyboard, of course. So here we go. I don't know. That thing isn't on. Okay. I hear myself here. Okay. So how many of you were in my talk earlier today about introducing C# async? Okay. Of those that didn't raise their hands, how many haven't seen async yet? Okay, that might be a little tricky, but I'll actually explain the basic concept as I do the first demo. Is the audio okay, actually? Because, yeah, I hear an echo. Okay, whatever. So let's create a new project and just create a very, very simple async method and then look behind the scenes of how it actually works. I'll use a Windows Forms app just for fun and giggles. It will just have a single button on it, and that's where all my code will go in this demo. So here we go. The trusted WinForms designer. And if I get some controls, let's just put a button on it. And we're just going to play with that button for 75 minutes. Beautiful. Good. So here I have a method. You know, I can click it, and I want to do some async stuff in it using the new async await and, you know, the async and the await keywords. So let's just do a web request, something very simple to start with, and then we'll add some more stuff to it. So in my demo, I want to do, first of all, simple async. That's the first thing. Secondly, async that returns some value. Like, you know, if you return a task of int, like, how does that value get propagated? A little bit of bad exceptions, and then, if there's some time remaining, some compiler voodoo around stack spilling. That's a beautiful technique used internally. So we'll actually see all of that stuff. I might go to IL code sometimes, but I'm basically going to focus on building everything myself. Let's just 1 second, hold on tight here. My brightness of the screen sort of high performance, beautiful. Okay, it sort of went dark on me over here. So, okay, let's start with creating an async method. So the only thing you do to make a method async is you put the async keyword on it. Then you get a compiler warning that says you're not doing any asynchronous work in here. Hence, you know, this method will run synchronously. Well, if you don't do async work, you know, it's kind of a moot argument to use async on that method. Notice that you can put the async modifier on a method that's an override of some existing member or a button handler. You know, those things aren't meant to be async originally, but now you can mark them as async. So it doesn't mess up overload resolution, those kind of things. So now that I'm here, let's actually create a new web client. Okay, web client like this. Whoops. Okay. And now on the web client, which will be my trusted type today to do async, I'll actually look for this download data task async method. And download data task async takes in an address. And then, you know, what you get back is, as you will see in just a second, I'll call that thing result. If we hover, it's a task of byte array. That's not what I want. I want download string task async, which returns not a byte array, but a system.string. So it's a task of system.string, which means you can look at that guy and sort of ask, well, you know, are you already completed? For example, you could check the status and you could do all sorts of other things here. That's not the way I want to interact with it. I want to use this await keyword to actually await the operation and then have the rest of my method execute when the operation completes. So what I will do here is I will try to fish the HTML out of the web request by doing await this task async. What that thing does, we'll look into much more detail about it, but basically what it means, split up the method in two portions here. Everything before the await runs first, and then when we hit the await, the rest of the method gets scheduled to run when the task completes using a callback. So that's what's going on here. So now I have the HTML. Let's do html.length.toString and put it in the title of the form. This is really a line of business app that's very valuable. So this will have a window with the title bar showing how many characters there are on the Bing homepage. You will want to run this thing every day. Okay, 24,930. Maybe it will change during our demo. Would be kind of cool if they upload a new version, but good. So how does this work? Actually, let's add one more thing. First of all, I sort of want to show you that in this case, you know, this thing went really fast because the internet is really good. Like, if I would just do the synchronous stuff, well, it might just have worked. Let's try to do something a little more intensive. Let's actually await task.delay of 2 seconds. If you do thread sleep 2 seconds, definitely your UI is blocked. But if you await the asynchronous sleeping of 2 seconds, that means the method returns to its caller, the UI loop can do whatever it wants to do, and after 2 seconds, the method continues executing. So I'm awaiting a sleep of 2 seconds. So I can do that, and it will just work. And in fact, let's just go here and do this.text equals drumroll, meaning like, you know, we did the download, but we're going to wait for 2 seconds to show you the length of the thing in the title bar. Very useful again. But now you see multiple awaits, like this thing is sort of going in sequence. So I click the button, drumroll, and 2 seconds later, yes, there it is, that's the length of the thing. So if you do that synchronously with thread.sleep, all sorts of bad things would happen. So how does this thing compile? In fact, let's actually simplify it a little, because this is already 2 awaits, and that's a lot of stuff to write. But we'll actually go through it, and you know, if we have some time left, and actually I think we will, I will even try to put this thing in a while loop and like do so all sorts of fancy things. So this is really, you know, fasten your seatbelts. Here we go. So how does this thing convert the code? That's the question. So what is this await to, and what's the impact of having the async modifier on my method? Those are the 2 questions to answer. So how does await work? If you were in my talk before, you saw that await is based on a pattern. It's basically just a couple of methods that the compiler knows about, it looks for, and then it talks to those methods to orchestrate the asynchrony. So how does the pattern look? Let's actually try to put this thing in 2 pieces. Let's take this task async thing, which is the argument or the operand to await, and actually stash it into some temporary variable. I will use underbar t for compiler-generated names, and I will have the whole alphabet by the end of the talk. But so this thing is, as you can see, a task of string. The act of awaiting a task of string gives you back the string asynchronously, or when this thing fails, there is an exception, at the point of the await, this thing might throw, and you can actually put a try catch around your await or the rest of the code to catch the exception that was asynchronously thrown in the back. So await can return successfully or exceptionally. So how does this thing decipher? How do we decipher this pattern? Well, let's take a look at T. T has a new method. If you have the async CTP installed, it will be an extension method. This is .NET 4.5, and you know, once we ship .NET 4.5, it will be an instance method, as you can see. And this method is called getAwaiter. I'm not going to make the getAwaiters joke again, but you know, just remember this. What you get back out of this is a task awaiter of string. Okay? What's a task awaiter do? Well, let's actually assign it. Var awaiter, okay, like this. Compiler-generated name, like it's not the code that you have to write. You never have to write this stuff, just to be clear. It's just showing what the compiler sort of does. If you look at the awaiter, what does it have? It has 2 things. It has actually 3 things. It has an isCompleted property. So we can check, is this thing already done by the point you do the await? Why is that interesting? Because in that case, we don't have to go to the voodoo of a callback, which is a delegate invocation, which is expensive. Like you might actually be in your method and say, you know, var task, you know, var task equals, you know, download string task async, and not await it immediately. First, I'm going to do some while loop with some other processing. That task is already going. And then after the while loop, I want to await it. But at that point, chances are high that the thing is already done. Then we don't have to register a continue with the task and go to all sorts of delegate invocations to come back. So this is an optimization. The compiler will first write, if it's already completed synchronously, great. You know, we're lucky. We can just continue executing. If not, we're going through the slow path. And you will see the slow path involves quite a bit of things. So that's the next thing. If the awaiter is completed, we can safely walk up to the awaiter and do get result, like this. What's get result give back? Get result gives back a string. That's the HTML. So that's, you're awaiting the thing, it's already done, you can just fish out the result, this thing is not blocking. If you have a task and you do dot result on it without checking whether it's already completed, this thing would block. So that's why we do the if check first. In the other case, we need to do some other stuff. So else, and in fact, you know, my code is now starting to end up in pieces. I will actually refactor it in just a moment, but this is just to sort of decipher the awaiter pattern. In the other case, of course, some additional stuff goes here, and there will be some go-tos at some point. Beautiful. Now that we're here, this is the slow path. This is the slow path. The task is not completed yet. I'm in this method. The rest of my method, after the await, needs to run at some point. What do we do? We pick up the rest of the method as a delegate and register it with the awaiter to say, at your convenience, at the point you're done downloading this thing, please kick me in the back and continue executing from that point. So I basically need to give it a delegate that later will continue executing the current method. That's the idea. This is really an alias for continue with on task of T. It's like the thing that ultimately does a continue with. So awaiter.uncompleted, that's the guy. And it takes in an action named continuation. This is to call me back to continue executing the current method. Now, I don't have that action anywhere yet. Where does that come from? Well, the compiler generates it, of course. How does it do that? Let's take a look at that in just a second now. And so at this point, do you still get the awaiter pattern? It looks for the getAwaiter. It gets an awaiter object. It sees whether it's already completed. Good, we're lucky. Not completed. Let's go through the slow path and register the rest of the method as a callback. That's the basic idea. So that's what we have. By the way, just a little remark. The awaiter on task of T is a struct. That means it doesn't involve any heap allocations, which is beautiful. At some points, you know, you can get unlucky, and this thing, you know, on a slow path needs to be heap allocated. We do that in a lazy fashion. So, like, this thing doesn't get boxed unless you're on the slow path. Just a little side remark. So awaiters typically are structs for efficiency reasons. So how does this work now? Let's actually start again from where we were and actually redo this whole piece of code, but now the real way. So this was sort of setting the scene of how the compiler does some of the transformation. Now let's get serious and do the real stuff. So this was the, you know, executive overview. Okay. So we needed an action at some point. We needed to give that guy that uncompleted the action to continue executing the current method. What does that mean, continue executing the current method? It means coming back to the method, but not run from the beginning. It means jump to a certain place in the method. So what the compiler really needs to do is to analyze all the blocks that run synchronously in one go. So that's all the blocks between awaits, before awaits, around loops, all of those things. So basic block analysis between all the await points. So it's like there is somebody with chalk sort of drawing lines here, like there's an await that means cut it off there and so forth. So we're going to do that, and inevitably that results in a state machine. A state machine that says when we enter this method and we're in the initial state, run this. If we're back in this method because we resulted from, you know, or came back from awaiting an operation, jump there. Like, it will become a jump-based system. So let's actually get rid of the drum roll for now. And let's actually comment this out. First thing the compiler does is get rid of this async. It's just, you know, a translation. It starts with an async method. That's how you write the code. But the compiler takes that away and makes it a classic C-sharp 4-based method. Like, it's just syntactic sugar. It's very sweet syntactic sugar because you don't have to write much. So what do? We introduce a state, which is like a program counter to sort of know where we are in this method. Which block are we executing? Next, we need to create an action that we can give to those awaiters to continue running the current method. So how will we call that thing? We'll actually call it move next, do the next part of the method. And that will be an action delegate. Okay? And now let's actually build it. Move next equals an action, like this. And in there, we'll switch on the state to see, why is this delegate being called? Is it because we run the code for the first time? Is it because the await to the download string completes, and then we need to do the rest of the code? Is it because the await to task.delay completes? Like, it's basically based on the state, it knows where it needs to resume. So that's what we do here, and ultimately, we call this whole thing at the beginning. So when we call button one click, we set up this whole state machine thing and we start it, which means at that point we end up in this piece of code and the state will be zero, so we'll actually execute case zero. Okay? That's the first part that we will execute. What's the first part? Look at the original method. What's running when you call the button click event? Everything up to the first await point. This is this piece of code and that piece of code. The rest needs to go through that is completed, uncompleted, that whole dance with the awaiter. Okay? So we'll move this thing into this basic block. So when we enter the method, because we're at the beginning, we new up the web client. That's beautiful. Then we get this task thing over here, which I will call T. So that's my task. And that T thing is a task of string. Var T equals default of task of string. I'm, you know, a var guy. Everything is var types on the right, you know? Like, if you don't like that, rewrite it. That's fine. So I have this thing now. I have the task. And now I need to see, is this thing already done or not? What do I need to do? Do I need to come back here? Or do I just continue executing? So we'll get the awaiter. Get awaiter. That's the compilation for the await keyword. And what we get out of that is an awaiter. What's an awaiter? It's something of type task awaiter of string, and we'll call it A. And this lives in system runtime compiler services, so add some other namespace. So now I have the awaiter. We're still running synchronously in the context of the button click event. We're trying to figure out what to do with this task. Let's see. Is it already done? If it's completed, that's beautiful. It's completed. I can just continue executing my current method. How will we do that? We'll introduce a case one, which is the next part. What's the next part? That's the part after the await completes. The await completes, it's safe now to fish out the value out of the awaiter. So we'll do a go to case one. Compilers are allowed to write go to cases, humans are not. So, go to. Beautiful. So we have a go to case one. That's the synchronous case. Everything is hunky-dory. We can just fish it out. Now, if it's not completed yet, we don't want to block here. We don't want to sit here, because then it's synchronous again. We're back to where we started. So we have to go through the dance of hooking up the continuation to kick the method in the back when it's done doing the download. How do we do that? Well, we say, dear awaiter, when you're completed, execute move next, which is my current delegate I'm in. So I'm basically giving myself to that guy, saying, when you're done downloading the string, call me back. However, if I do that, my state is still zero, I would be in an endless loop, right? This thing would run again, and this thing would say, oh, when you're completed, call me back. It would come back here, and it would start doing the same thing. Like, that's not what I want. So before I call that thing, I set my state to one. What does that mean? When we complete, when the download completes, it calls me back on move next, and we enter the switch statement again, and we fall to case one. That's after the await. And now we can fish out the result and do the rest of the code. So what's the rest of the code? It's actually getting that HTML thing. Var HTML equals, what do we do here? We go back to the awaiter, we get the result. We got here either because it synchronously completes, meaning get result is safe to do, the result is already there, just takes a nanosecond to get it out, or we have gone through the whole continuation thing, somebody was off drinking coffee on the internet, waiting to serve you the Bing.com website, it came back, and then we're back here. And now it's safe to get the result, because it has arrived on my network card. So now I have HTML, and I can do the rest of the code like this. So you see, that's how the code got broken up into two pieces. Just to convince you that this thing actually works, let's set a breakpoint, in move next, let's run it, click on the button. We are in move next, we are still at state 0. Why? Because we're actually calling the button click handler, we call move next, that's to kick the whole thing off. And now we go through it, state 0, we new up a web client, we do the download string task async, we get the awaiter, and now we check whether we have completed. Oh no, we weren't lucky, you know, it's not done yet, the thing, you know, took a long time, it's still going, so let's go through the slow part. Make my state 1, set the uncompleted handler to move next, and now I press F5. What's really going to happen is my current method, my, you know, if you look at the call stack, I'm still in the button one click handler, right? That thing is just going to bail out. It's just going to return to its caller. It's going to back out, back to the message loop that dispatches other UI events. But now that the waiter knows how to call me back to do the rest of the method, so at some later point in time, we end back in the state machine, and we'll actually see state being set to 1. Now here we are. Where are we? Look at this whole stack. We're not on the UI thread anymore. We are in the web client that completed its download string. We did a handle completion. Some task completion source voodoo was happening. We're running the continuations. And now we're back where we started with a little bit of synchronization context between it to make sure we end up back on the UI thread ultimately. But so as we go through this piece of code now, we're in case 1. We can fish out the HTML. Here's bing.com. And now I can put it on the UI. And if everything goes according to plan, and my focus actually works here, let's run it again. Has some problems switching, but there you see the results comes back. Like, my debugger sometimes steals focus, so excuse me for that. But that's how it looks. At 24.9.30, they haven't uploaded a new version yet. We'll stay here till that number changes. Okay. Good. So, does that sort of make sense? If not, ask me questions now. Yes? Which variable is not in scope? WC. Okay. So I've lifted WC. WC. Let's take a look at WC. Okay, so WC is here. Is your question about lifetime of those things? Can it get collected or something? Or... okay, yes, exactly. Okay, so if you want to use the WC after the await, the compiler will not generate this piece of code. It will actually extend the scope of this web client. So the question is, if you use web client after the await, say here I'm doing another web client stuff kind of thing, another request, like where does the WC come from? Well, the answer is it will just do this. WC equals new web client, and then it will allocate on the top here var WC equals default web client. And now it has a longer lifetime. And so now this move next actually has a closure over WC, so it's kept alive, and we can reuse it multiple times. But so that scope is kept as small as possible, because otherwise you have a heap allocated object that extends the lifetime of all those guys. And that's something we don't want in this case. Because if you're running a while through loop over here, WC can't go away, because it's still sitting there. So you don't want that. So here we go. That's how it looks right now. Okay, other questions? Oh my goodness, floodload of questions. Let's do it asynchronously. Okay. I don't want to be blocked here. How did you get back to the UI thread? Good question. How do you get back to the UI thread? The answer is the awaiter that we get back from task of T, actually captures synchronization context.current. And when it has to run the uncompleted thing, the thing I gave to uncompleted, it runs this thing on the synchronization context by doing a post. So, and that's what it does. You can actually override that. If you have the awaiter, you can actually do configure await false. And that actually means don't capture the current synchronization context, continue where you just happen to be. Which means in this case on an IO completion port, thread pool thread, and you know somewhere on the thread pool, touching the UI, not a good idea there. If you do it in ASP.NET, for example, you wouldn't be on the original synchronization context of the incoming web call. So in that case, you would start meandering around on the thread pool, and like you would have lost the original state associated with the request, because that travels with the synchronization context. In fact, it also flows the security context. So it flows a number of things, not just the synchronization context. But so that's how it actually happens. Behind the scenes, this guy captures the synchronization context and we post back to it. So no this.invoke, dispatcher begin invoke anymore. Okay. Other question? Yep. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, so what happens if the task completes between the is completed test and this thing? Between registering that guy? You were just extremely unlucky that you had just a little too late that you checked this completed. It turns out to be true now, and you're going to the slow path. Like, can happen, but, you know, no big disasters. You know, it. If you register on complete, yep. Actually, the awaiter could check in the uncompleted. It could actually check, you know, if it's already complete, I will run this continuation synchronously. Like it could do something like that. But you know, the compiler always generates this completed thing here. The time between checking this and registering that is really slow, really fast. I mean, really really short. The only thing we do is up the state variable. You know, the instruction counter kind of thing. So there is not much happening, so the chances are very low that this thing is already completed and this thing is kind of a moot argument to jump through the continuation, but it will still do it. Yeah. And nothing bad happens, it's just an additional delegate call, but like chances very low that, you know, within that time it completes. Yeah. Other question?
Yeah, so it's executed on a separate thread on one core. Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good question. The question was, is it executed on one thread, one core? And what if you want to run it on a different thread? So, first of all, this piece of code doesn't use any threading at all. That might be, whoa, what does that mean? Like, how does that concurrency happen? What's really going on, I'm basically, what I'm doing here is I'm orchestrating the asynchrony introduced by my network stack. So what's happening here, I do download string task async. What ultimately happens is we go to the, you know, to the web APIs all the way to the kernel, and the kernel says, well, that's nice. I'm sending off this network packet over the network, and I'm hooking up a completion port that says when, you know, the request completes, using direct memory access, the network driver can write things into main memory. And at that point, you know, a little thread pool thread is woken up to actually process the rest of the request. So there wasn't a thread during the entire lifetime of the request. Like there was a thread at the beginning, then the network is doing whatever it wants to do. It wakes up using an interrupt request, the operating system, and then a thread pool thread is just taken as the victim to do the rest of the work. So that's where the maximum extent where the threading is introduced. Now, that means that if you actually call this button click thing multiple times, you will have two outstanding I/O completion ports that are basically running at the same time. So, you know, you will have, you know, code that's running in parallel. You will have multiple instances of the button click handler that are at different points of their execution. But because, you know, after an await, we synchronize back to the synchronization context, and you run the UI, it's a single-threaded system here when my method is running. Like, my method runs, the next part of the method has to run, it queues it up in the UI thread, and the UI thread does the rest of the work. So, you know, it's still single-threaded. You don't need to do any locking stuff here. And if you do the configure await false, then you're basically saying it's a free-threaded world, you know, like something completes, it runs somewhere else, like I don't want to come back. And then you might have two thread pool threads that are doing stuff using the completion of web requests. And if then you're sharing some state and writing to the same state, you will have to do synchronization. But that's an expertise case to use configure await or false. That's for performance tuning in certain cases. Does that sort of make sense? Okay, yeah. There was one more question over there. Okay, can you pose a time limit? How long to wait? Great question. I will show it right now. Okay, so how do you make this thing time out after a certain time? Control-Shift-F9. So let's actually pretend we are not the compiler anymore, so I will just get rid of all of this code by just marking it out. And going back to user mode instead of compiler mode. And let's try to make this thing time out after, say, 5 seconds or something, or 2 seconds. So I have to make it an async method again, like this. So how would you do that? Well, you actually have this one task here that does the string task async stuff, right? That's the guy that's basically doing stuff on the network. So that's my first thing. I will call this thing rec for request. Var request equals that guy. Now I want to sort of await that thing to come back or a timer to fire saying, you've already been working here for 30 seconds on this thing, please stop, like, because it's a moot point to wait any longer. So how would you do that? Well, we have something on task called when any. So you can do task.whenany of request, comma, and then task.delay of, say, 30 seconds. And what this does is you have the request, which is a task object. You have task.delay, which is a task object. When any, when you await that guy, it will come back when any of the two complete. And then you can check which one completed. Was it the timer, the timeout thing, or was it the request? And based on that, you can do something else. So what you do with this thing is you await the when any, that will continue to execute when any of the two completes, and then you say, if this thing happens to be the request, I was good, and I could actually fish out, you know, the value out of my request. The second await here will already be completed, because, well, when any said I'm done because the request completes, that's this equality check, and now I'm doing await request here, it's already completed, I'm just fishing out the HTML and I can do the rest. In the other case, well, it will be the timeout that came back. So I will do else, this.text equals timed out, like something like this. And so that's how you can basically do multiple of those guys and then do when any, when all, or any of those kind of things. So if you used Win32, this is the same thing as wait for multiple objects EX or wait for single object EX. If you've used the .NET framework, you know there's wait handle dot wait any and wait all. That's also the same thing, just a different dialect. Here it's with task. Now, quiz question, because this is kind of an interesting topic. What's the type of when any? What's the return type of when any? What?
Task.
That's the right answer. Let's keep it silent for a second. Let's try to find some other ones. Task is in the good direction. It's a little bit more than just task. Task. Of T, but what's the T? Somebody said task of T. I want to know the T. Task of task. So what this thing does is, just look at the code what I'm doing here. I'm awaiting this thing. I'm awaiting the result of when any. And I'm comparing the result of the await with a request object, which is of type task. So the thing that I was awaiting returns back a task, which means the original thing has to be a task of task. So when you await this thing asynchronously, it tells you which of the two task objects completed. And then you can do an equality check. We could also have done something like task when any, and then returning a task of int, and then you have to check the index in the array. That's like wait for multiple objects EX that returns you the index in an array. But we already have objects in .NET. Why can't we just do object equality checks? So we said, like, let's do task of task, and then you can just compare, was it this guy or was it that guy, just based on reference equality. That's nicer. But so behind the scenes, this is a task of task. If I go over it, F12, you will see this thing returns task of task. You got to love generics. Good. Any other questions so far? Oh, there's one more. You don't have to do the second to wait. In this case, it would be safe. It would be safe to do rec.result, like this. Because you already know you completed, so you can fish out the value immediately, but you still have to fish it out, right? You know, you have a task of string and you want to get the string out. So in this case, this would be safe because the equality check sort of guarantees that you already completed. The dot result property will throw an exception in case there was an exception, so that's safe as well. But I would recommend using await just for the sake of it. No, I would actually recommend using await because if you refactor your code, before you know, you have a dot result call sitting somewhere where you don't know for sure it already completed. And then you've introduced blocking. So, like, just do the await, it will do the if completed check. In this case, it will guarantee to be true, and it will just be efficient. Just one Boolean check. Okay?
Is it possible to cancel a request, like, when you press the button twice, something that it only executes
Yep. So is it possible to cancel a request? The answer is yes, if the underlying operation can be canceled. So if you have APIs in the .NET framework that take in a cancellation token as last parameter, you can use that. Mm-hmm. If you don't want to execute the same code twice, you will have to write some code to prevent that. So in this case, what you could do is, at the beginning of coming into this method, you could say button1.enabled equals false, and then at the end, when you exit the method, you say button1.enabled equals true. And of course, that enabled thing, enabled equals true, will only happen after this await complete. So it will not prematurely open up the button again. If you want to make sure that even if there is an exception, this happens, well, then, of course, you just do try finally around this whole block. And that just works with await, and we'll talk about that in just a second, how exception handling works in the face of await as well, which is a little more voodoo in the compiler. Yep, more questions? And then we'll come back. Yep. Yeah, so so you can only use async programming if the classes you use are async enabled. So that means that they need to return an awaitable type, which is now task of T or iasync operation of T for when RT. So those are the two types. In .NET 4.5, all the APIs that do asyncony, where we used to have begin end method pairs, now will have task returning methods as well. If you generate WCF proxies, you will get task based web methods back. So, you know, your get greeting with a string name that's sent to web service will return task of string. So you can await your web request. If you don't have that luxury and you still have some old begin-end pair sitting somewhere, which is the old way of representing asynchrony in the framework, you can actually do task.factory.fromAsync and pass in the begin and end method delegates and we'll make a task out of it. So you can convert the old begin-end stuff into tasks. And then you can await it. So if you still have old code around, you can just do the conversion. So I could have done that for the web client. Well, not so much for the web client because it's event-based asynchrony with the completed handler. Like, that's a little more tricky. But like filestream.beginReadEndRead would actually work using that. Filestream, you know, fs. Fs has a begin read, as you can see, but now it also has a read async, which returns a task. But say that this thing wouldn't be there. We had forgotten about it. Then you can just say from async fs begin read fs end read. You will have to specify some generic parameters and stuff, but that's the ID. You will have to say that it takes in a byte array, an int, and it returns an int or something like that. And ultimately, it will come back. You know, like, but you can do it. And you know, we have samples on MSDN for that. You just have to give us the right generic parameters. Don't quite know the begin read signature by heart, but that's the ID. So you basically do that little bridge thing. Now you have a task returning guy, and you can use it, you can await it. So that's, and hopefully over time, you will not see this from async thing anymore, because things will phase out to become task-based. Okay, so let's come back to this now, and clean up the code a little bit, and try to put the whole thing in a loop. You know, just to add one more thing, and then we'll try to do some exception handling. And in fact, because I'm doing a loop using for each, there is some exception handling going on anyway. So that will be nice. So let's clean up a little bit here. Let's continue using the web client. Let's just do a request. Let's not delay this time. Let's do a wait on this guy. I'm just trying to go back. Actually, there's a Control Z, I believe, in Visual Studio. I've forgotten about that one. So let's just do this. And we're back where we started. Okay. So let's try to do a little bit of looping, because that's one of the beauties of async, is it just works with any imperative control flow mechanisms that you know of. You can put this whole thing in a while loop, and when we hit an await in the middle of a while loop, it will basically suspend the loop, and then when it comes back, it will do the next iteration to the loop. Like, trying to write that yourself, like, you pull your hair out, and that's basically what we're going to do now. I need a haircut anyway, so good. So var sites equals new list of string. And let's actually try to download from multiple sites. Not in parallel, just sequential for the time being. So, www.bing.com. What's another nice website? Let's say http://msdn.microsoft.com. And let's do http://www.msn.com and whatever, you know. Somehow I think I work at a certain company in Redmond. But, you know, so, good. There's some traffic for you. So now I have those sites. What I want to do is, using a single web client, let's just have one web client instance that I reuse. Let's do for each var site and sites. Let's actually download the site. And put the HTML just for fun and giggles in a list of string. So I'm just collecting all the HTML pages. So I'm going to await this HTML thing. I'm going to do HTMLS.add of the HTML. And I'm going to update the status of my title bar with something like HTMLS.count plus downloaded. So we'll see one downloaded, two downloaded, three downloaded. It will basically tick on the title bar. Again, very useful. And finally, at the end, you know, when we end this thing, we'll say this.txt equals done or something. So the last number of downloaded will be overwritten immediately by the done thing. But so you see, I can do a for each loop with an await keyword inside, and the compiler splits it up, and you know everything goes. So let's just try to run it and actually hit that button really quick. One downloaded, two downloaded, three downloaded, done. Okay. And my UI was responsive, otherwise I wouldn't have been able to update the title bar to begin with, like if my UI wouldn't be responsive. So you see that thing ticking along? It's just working fine. So how does that work? How do we split up a loop into two pieces somehow? Like, well, a lot of stuff, but let's just highlight the main things. So first of all, little quiz question, what does a for each compile into? Because for each is not the basic concept. The compiler knows a for each loop in terms of some other things, like enumerator, while move next, you know, all of that stuff. One more thing, maybe. It does something with the enumerator when it's done. It disposes it. So it's like a using block with an enumerator. Like, so let's actually decompile this thing a little bit. So what this really is, it's a using block that says var e equals sites.getEnumerator. It gets the enumerator, and then inside the using block that I'm adding now, it's doing while e.moveNext. I already have an e. Okay, it's compiler generated, so underbar e. While moveNext, we're doing some stuff here, and you know, if we're in the moveNext, we survived, we have a current value, and the current value is site. So this is the closest approximation to the for each loop. Now, using by itself is also not a primitive. Like, using is a try finally. So let's try to compile this into a try finally. So we have this thing sitting here. This becomes a try block. And then at the end, we say finally. If it's exceptional or not, I don't care. I want to dispose this guy. In reality, there is a null check in certain cases as well. Because if E is visible to user code, you might override it with null, and this shouldn't throw a null reference exception. But so that's basically what this code looks like. So my simple for each is already a little bit expanded. So now we have the job of splitting this thing into pieces. Okay? What's the first piece? When you enter the method in state 0, as you remember, we run all of this stuff, all of this stuff, all of this stuff, all of this stuff, all of this stuff. Oops, we had an await. Then the next part of the method needs to be scheduled to run when this download completes. How does that happen? Well, we run this part, you know, this part, this part. Oops, a curly brace. Somehow, we need to jump back here to do the next one. So we also have to cut up the method into two pieces. The while loop needs to become the first part of the while loop, the last part of the while loop. So, okay, do we want to do that? Yes. Okay, we want to do that. Good. That's the spirit, you know. I love the Netherlands, you know. Okay, here we go. So let's make it not async anymore and do the human compiler experience. Good. So, first of all the state I have here needs to be lifted up. So I have the sites, I have the HTMLs, I have the web client. Where am I going to put those guys? I'm going to put them outside the move next because I'm using them across multiple iterations. Like, my method in different places beyond the wait points before needs to access those guys. So we'll do sites, we'll do HTMLs. Oops, sorry. We'll have those two guys. Let me copy the code once more in here. I have the web client. I use it multiple times as well, I believe. So we're just extending the scope of all those guys now. to be the lifetime of the method. I think all of them have that lifetime. I haven't really looked at it. Maybe one can be cut off a little bit, but let's just assume that that's the lifetime. So we have this. This becomes default of list of string, because it's at state 0 that we do the allocations, not any earlier. I want to keep myself honest here and do things really in the different stages that happen. So recap, this method enters, move next is called, we run state 0, we run everything till the first await point. New up a web client, new up a list, new up a list. That's sort of the things we were doing. Apart after that, so I can already get rid of this, after that we get this enumerator. Okay, that's the next part, let's do this as well. Next thing, we get the enumerator. Var e equals default I enumerator. That's definitely used to cross multiple await calls because my loop needs to continue asynchronously. So an I enumerator of string. And let's copy that code as well. This whole thing gets copied into here. Okay, so that's really what we had in the code to begin with. Those pieces of state. Now the real thing happens. Now we need to do that while loop. That's a little bit interesting. So how do we do that? Well, if you look at a while loop, really there are multiple blocks in a while loop. A while loop is basically a while true loop with an if true check, like that checks a condition. If the condition is false, it breaks from the loop. So you can write it like a while true kind of thing as well. So that's a different way of thinking about the loop. So what does it really do? It has some different stages. It has the state that enters the loop and checks the condition, and maybe escapes from the loop if the condition doesn't hold anymore. Otherwise, it does an iteration and it needs to come back to the beginning to recheck the condition. So we have to basically split it into different stages. So I'm actually going to introduce a new state here. I'll have to renumber states a little bit. But I'm going to go to case one, like this, just falling through. I could just write fall through code here, but let's just make it explicit. And this will be the main part of my loop that checks the Boolean condition. If true, it starts executing the code in the loop. If false, it escapes. Okay? That's the part that I'm now trying to compile. So what do we do? We do e.moveNext, and we have to check whether moveNext is true or false. Based on that, we have to enter the loop or we have to escape the loop. Okay? So what else do I want to say here? Oh, yes, that's what was on my mind. I'm ignoring the try finally for the time being. Very convenient. Okay. So assume it doesn't exist, because it's kind of tricky to add. And we'll see in just a moment how it's added. So now I'm in case one. I check the move next. If the move next is false, we're actually going to escape from the loop. We're going to break from the loop. So let's do go to case 9. I'm just making up a number here, which will do the stuff after my loop completes. What's case 9? Let's take a look. What's happening after the loop completes? Oh, this text equals done. That's nice. Let's move that into case 9. Good. So that's if the Boolean check fails, we jump out of the loop and we do the rest. Good. Now the part of the loop itself. What do we do in the loop? Let's take a look. If we enter the loop, we get the current value, and we do this await download string task async. Luckily, we have that code already sitting around. So we enter the loop over here. In the other case, we can just do some stuff. We get the site. That's good. That's the body of my loop. I have the site now. Now I need to do the whole dance with the awaiter. I already have the dance with the awaiter sitting here. It's this guy. It's all of this stuff that we were looking at before. So let's actually indent it. And the dance with the awaiter is changed to actually take the site, do a download string task async. Now we have a task object. We get an awaiter. And we see whether we are completed. If we are completed, what does that mean? It means that we can just burst through and continue executing the while loop because the result is already available. So what do we do in that case? We jump to a new case, case 2. I have to renumber things a little bit. Maybe I should go back to the old GW Basic days. Like, you know, when I first did GW Basic, I saw like a book and I said, why do those crazy people do line number 10 and 20 and 30 and 40? I just renamed it 1, 2, 3. And then I came to the conclusion, I need to insert something. Oh, yes, that's why they do it. So, and then I started doing, because I insert so much, like 1,000, 2,000, and so forth. So, okay, so don't do go to anymore. So we go to case 2, and case 2 is the last part of my loop that checks, well, that actually fishes out the result, and then does whatever it does. What does it do? It gets the HTML, and it adds it to HTMLs. It updates the counter in the title bar. So that's what it needs to do here. That's case 2, get the result. We have the HTML, doesn't become the title anymore. We do HTMLs add HTML, and we update this counter. But now we would be breaking from this loop. We would break the switch statement, and we would just die. We wouldn't do anything anymore. What do we need to do to trigger the loop again? We need to jump back to case 1, which checks the condition and does the same thing all over again. So we just, instead of breaking here, we do a go to case 1. Okay, so now we have a loop between case 1 and case 2. Case 1 is the first part of my while loop. Case 2 is the second part. So we're jumping between those things all the time. I haven't looked at the asynchronous case yet. We're in the middle of the loop. We got this download string task async. It's not completed. Oh my god, what do I need to do? I need to hook up the rest of my while loop to the awaiter. Where does it need to continue running when it comes back? Not in state 1, because then I'm back here. It needs to continue running in state 2. So it comes back, it schedules itself, and then it does the rest part of the code. So that's basically how this thing translates, ignoring the try finally at this point still. But it's actually proof that it works. It would be kind of embarrassing if it doesn't. I think it's okay. Okay, here we go. 1 downloaded, 2 downloaded, 3 downloaded, done. So that's the manual rewrite of that state machine. Now there is one thing missing, that try finally stuff. Kind of tricky. I'll actually show you the basic ID here because I want to show something. Oh, actually, I still have 23 minutes. And you guys are staying till Bing has more characters. So that's fine. So where do I put this try finally, for heaven's sake? Oh, a question. A question. Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, I see, yeah. The question is, does case 0 need to update the state to be state 1 and then go to case 1? In this case, I don't think there's any situation where you leave this method asynchronously and you don't have updated the state. It's basically you sort of need to remember the next state only at the point where you do the uncompleted registration. Before that, you update the state. That's essentially what happens. I think the compiler is a little more... It's doing a little more places where it injects the state number also for debugging the compiler itself or whatever. Other question? Yeah. Yep.
So this means that the iterations don't go in parallel.
The iterations in this particular case won't go in parallel. I'm downloading one guy, and then when it continues, it does the next guy. If I don't want that, what do? I just allocate an array of tasks of strings, and I do task.wait any, or wait all, better. Then you do that explicitly, yes. Yeah. Because this is about writing sequential code, you await, and that means you wait at that point. If you want to do task-based parallelism, you can have 15 of those task of string guys, and then you want to await all of them in parallel. Then you just say, you whip an array, and do task.when all. Okay, so question about technology I'm working on. Will you integrate that with reactive extensions? I can talk separately after the talk about the plans in Rx. But so reactive extensions will have a better together story. So what we do in Rx is we allow you to convert a task of T to an observable and then party on it. And there you can do parallel composition using link style queries and all of those kind of things. But so that's a separate domain. So this is the sequential iteration based code where you need to do sequencing. If you want to do parallelism, you do it explicitly. Yeah. Okay. Other questions? No? Okay. So, where do I put my try finally to make sure the enumerator goes away? Tricky business. Could I put the try finally around this whole move next thing? Not really. Why not? Let's take a look. The try finally is sitting over my loop. And my loop was actually state 1 and state 2. If I put it around the whole state machine, it also protects, throw in an exception from the web client constructor or this or that or the get enumerator. And then in the finally we try to dispose E, and E is not initialized yet. Not a good thing. We don't want it to sit over here as well. We don't want the try finally to sit over this.text equals done. that was not where it was. Like, it should be exactly how you wrote it. So how do we put one over just two cases? The answer is I could try to do it in C#, but you know, the C# compiler doesn't create C# code, it creates IL code, and there it's slightly easier to do. I say slightly because you have a whole lot of other concerns. But so the idea is I want to put a try finally around those two cases. Okay? I'll just, you know, try to cook something up that gives you the conceptual idea of what's happening. You just take out that whole piece of code. And you say case 1 and case 2 I want to handle simultaneously by doing a try finally and then switching on the state again and then paste the stuff I had. That works. Like, now I have one block with a try finally and I check the state again and then I know which specific case I'm in. It doesn't happen like that in reality, but that's conceptually what's going on. You have some more stuff now because I need to go to case 9, which is not in the current switch label. Okay, that's a little bit tricky. State equals 9. Just break from this guy. And then if you exit this case, this switch statement, if state equals 9, then go to case 9. Because you can't switch across switch blocks. So you have to start carrying state around. In reality, that happens using IL instructions that use and leave. The leave instruction allows you to escape try finally handlers in certain ways, which also needs to be a verifiable code. So there is some of that stuff going on anyway. But so that's what we have to do here. Now I have a try finally around all of this. And in here, I could do something like e.dispose. Maybe it's not completely right yet. Can somebody see why? This is the $1 million question. What? It what? Disposes twice? It's a good direction of thinking, like it might dispose things multiple times, but exactly when is the question. Like, there's something wrong with when we dispose, yeah. Yes, exactly. After the completion of case one, even the asynchronous case, we just fall out of this finally thing. So we hook up here, move next. We say, like, asynchronously, go to the next case. But now we're exiting this method. We're exiting the method. Oh, let's dispose the enumerator. We've disposed it before we completed the loop. Bad things will happen. In fact, if you do this on a list, it turns out nothing bad happens. Like, I tried it on list of T. You know, dispose is just a knob in that case. It doesn't need to allocate resources or something. Like, they just don't do much with it. Like, that's fine. Because it's just for the break case of a for each, no problem. If you do it on a link query, I tried it as well with an iterator. If you do dispose, it basically means the next time you call move next, it returns false, as if there is no further element anymore. That's sort of also disposing. If you do it over a network thing, likely object disposed exception will happen. So that's not what we want. So we need to protect this dispose handler only to run in certain cases. So let's introduce a Boolean somewhere. Why not? Var should run finally equals false. Equals true, and in case we go through the continuation here, that we will have to be called back in the future because we're not at the end yet, we say, don't run the finally, please. It's not no time yet, it needs to run later. And then in here we say, if should run finally, then we do the dispose. So that's sort of the whole compilation of this thing. The state machine is slightly different, but that's the idea. Like, try finally stuff needs to be done this way. What about try catch, catching exceptions? Somehow similar. Sometimes a retro, those kind of things. But so that's the idea. Let's actually try to run it. That's actually scary. But let's see. Let's actually just do the move next thing and actually step through it. First case, case 0, new upper web client, new upper list, get the enumerator, go to case 1. Switch. State, we're still in. Oops. Something's wrong. Okay, so that's where the remark of the gentleman on that row was actually good. In this case, we need to set state 1 because we're going to switch on it multiple times. So, you know, it was a very good remark. You know, sometimes you need to update the state. So state equals 1. We switch into that. If move next is true, that's good. We do current, we do download string async, get the awaiter. Is it completed? No, the network is still busy. We should go to state 2. We shouldn't turn the finallys. We're hooking up the continuation, and we're on our way out. We're on our way out here. We go to the finally, ultimately, over here. But we shouldn't turn the finally, so we don't dispose yet. Beautiful. Press F5. Network comes back. Next iteration. Let's go to, what's the state? Ah, the state is 1 or 2. Okay, what's the state? The state is 2, because we set the state to 2 before we registered the callback. So we're in the next part of the loop. We get the result, we add the HTML, we go to case 1. In case 1, we check move next. Oh, there's a next one to do. Same whole thing happens. So here's the next website. I had 4 websites, right? Third website. I think now I'm sort of at a point where move next might fail already. Let's see. F10. Oh, no, there was one more. Okay, one more website. Move next equals... Ah, move next equals false. State equals 9. Let's do the stuff after the loop. Let's go out of here. Let's break. State equals 9. We have to go to case 9. We're doing a go-to across a finally, which will, on its way out, actually run the finally. The finally says, ah, we should dispose. That's good. We dispose the enumerator at this point. We're out of the loop. And now we go to case 9, and we print this text equals done. And this thing should say done, indeed. And my focus thing is somehow broken, but you... Oh, there it is. Okay, so there you see it actually did it. With the finally at the right time, all of that stuff. So now it's good to touch back to reality somehow. Like, if you wanted to write correct for each loops over asynchronous operations in the past, this is what you had to do to make sure you did the disposes and all of that stuff correctly. Like, you don't want to do it, use a wait. Like, don't write this code ever again, if you ever did. Any more questions about this? I could talk about catch, I'm not going to, but, you know, it's sort of a similar mechanism. Because you might catch something that you shouldn't have caught, and then you have to rethrow it. So, some cases to consider. Question? Yep. Oh, any idea when it will be released with .NET 4.5 and VS 11? So we'll pretty soon be in beta together with, like, or in the time frame of the consumer preview of Windows 8. We'll have, you know, the beta available or the next preview, whatever we call it. And then, you know, ultimately, don't know the exact timing of the product yet, but in the next release of VS and .NET framework. Yeah. Okay. Next question. Yep. Is the .NET framework 4.5 available for VS 10 or VS 2010? No, as far as I know, it will be VS 11 only. But it's an update in place. For runtime, you know, it's actually an upgrade to the .NET 4.0 binaries. So, like, at runtime, it's just an install of the SDK. It just, you know, sits on top of 4.0. But to have the await keyword highlighted in VS, you will have to have VS 11. Yeah. Okay, so is a refresh scheduled for things like Windows Phone to have, like, async and stuff? Ultimately, there will be. I don't know the schedule of when that will happen. But, like, it's a matter of taking the new framework binaries in there and making sure, you know, all the async methods are there, the awaiters and all of that stuff. But so, ultimately, no matter what platform you're developing code for asynchronously, we'll have await support. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the question is, what's the pattern to focus on when talking about async, task-based asynchrony? The classic APM or the event-based APM is will still be there for compatibility, but if you do something new, task-based. Unless there are very, very, very good reasons not to do task-based for a certain API, but I can't see them. Like, if you do it in a tight loop and you allocate those task objects, typically it's not a problem. But, like, if it's a really, really tight loop, like, maybe task allocation is not the right thing. But, you know, typically it shouldn't be a problem. So you will see all APIs going to task-based asynchrony. Yeah. And if not, you can do task.factory.fromasync to bridge. Yeah. Okay. Oh, one more. Yep. Yep. Good question. Yep. So what happens with exceptions that are thrown from, say, a task? Do they get wrapped in, the aggregate exception, which is one of the TPL exception types? The answer is, internally they are wrapped, but we unwrap them at the wait boundaries. So what happens when you await a task, and it throws its one of its infamous exceptions? If it's an aggregate exception, the first one of the array will get thrown. That's what's going on. Aggregate exception was introduced in the framework for a number of reasons. First of all, if you do parallelism, like if you do task or if you do something like parallel.forEach or parallel.for, you have multiple tasks going in parallel. If multiple of those fail, well, we need to tell you that multiple things went wrong. So we need to have an aggregate exception. That was one reason. Now, for the non-parallel case, the aggregate exception was introduced not to get rid of the stack trace. Because in the CLR, like, you should think about it this way. Like, if you have a background worker, like a tadpole thread, that's throwing an exception, and then you're awaiting the task somewhere else, you do a continue with, what's the exception object you're seeing there? It's something that originated on one thread that got caught by a catch exception handler, catch all. That exception object was then put in the task as a system.exception object. And then if you rethrow it on that thread, your original stack trace is gone. So if you did task.result, poof, the thing throws, and yeah, the stack trace is gone. Like, the only thing you would see, the task throwed, and you didn't know where it came from. So we solved that problem initially in 3.5 and 4.0 by wrapping things. Like, you know, a target invocation exception and reflection is the same thing. It's a wrapper around an existing exception type, not to forget about the original stack trace. In .NET 4.5, in the CLR, we added something new called EDI, Exception Dispatch Info. An exception dispatch info allows you to rethrow an exception on a different thread, still having its original stack trace. So aggregate exception is not needed for that case anymore. The normal case of awaiting something is because you're receiving one value or there might be one exception. So the exception that comes out will be the original exception. So in the case of the web API, you do try catch. The catch would be web exception, not aggregate exception. So that's what you expect. If you do file IO, you catch an IO exception. And initially, it was somewhere wrapped in an aggregate exception in the task, but it got unwrapped for you. So again, just write the code as you would expect it to work. Yep.
As soon as you do the wait, the button can be turned, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what if you don't want that to happen? Because, you know, your caller doesn't expect it to be turned yet. You have to work out.
Mm-hmm. So the question is, like, if you hit an await, you return to your caller. In this case, you exit from the button click handler. What if you don't want to exit yet? So the question, I can interpret the question in a number of ways. Like, if you don't want to exit yet, maybe, you know, you're trying to do something too synchronous. So, you know, you need to do an await at some point, and after the await, you need to do something else. Like, it will not happen in the original call context of the button click, but it will be running in the continuation somewhere at a later point in time. Now, there is the case where before hitting the await and getting the object you will be awaiting on, you want to do something else. You can totally do that. You can say var HTML request equals web client.download string task async. Not awaited yet, but then do a little while loop, do some other stuff, and then at the end you say, I've done enough in the context of the current call. Now I need to yield control. I do await over my, I don't know how I call it, HTML web request task object. So you can do get the task, do other stuff, then await it. So that's like how you can sort of do slightly more work still. Does that make sense?
Well, it makes sense, but that was because you could, you know, the original caller might not expect you to finish that or, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Put on the async.
Okay, there's another question. So if the original caller doesn't expect you to return yet because the caller wants to do something else after you return in the assumption everything is done, that has to be done, then instead of returning a void method from async, what you return is a task-based method from async. So let's actually get this out here. And actually, let's move it up. I don't know. I have so much code sitting here now. I said it would only be one method that we are actually writing code in today. So that's good. So, oops, more stuff. So, say that you're in the button one click handler, and you know you want to do something, and you want to do this whole web stuff here. You know, would be async. You want to do this whole web thing, and you know you might want to do something else before returning to your caller. Now, in this case, it's a moot argument because returning to my caller is the message loop and it doesn't make any expectations. But say that I'm refactoring this code, okay? I'm refactoring this code and this distal text equals done thing has to happen after I've done all the work, okay? So I'm going to refactor this thing, extract method in helper. Look at this signature already. Our refactoring has been changed significantly. Refactoring this thing, it was a void returning method. What does it refactor it into? In an async method that returns a task that's called helper. And what is it going to do with the original piece of code here? Watch carefully. Poof, await helper. So helper runs, returns a task that you can await to wait its completion asynchronously. So like it's not void returning anymore, it returns a task so that you can wait for that thing asynchronously. When that thing completes, the next part runs. So the refactoring thing knows about async, all of that stuff. So, and that's actually, in this case, you know, my caller, the button one click handler, expects this helper to be completely done before updating the text to be done. So that's exactly, I think, the question you had, right? So I've only focused on void returning task methods, async methods. Async methods can return void. They can return task, which is like a void that you can look at to see it's completed. You can await it. And we have task of T returning methods. So if you want to return some, like I could do this as well, actually. If I want to return from this whole thing my list of strings, like this list of strings I have here, I can make this a helper that returns list of string, right? I can just do at the end return HTMLs. And now my caller can await the helper and will get the list. Done plus list.count. I downloaded plus sites. Happy face. So there you go. Now my helper returns the list of all the HTMLs that were downloaded. So you can return void, task, or task of list, and then you can await it in the original context. Yep.
What if you loop 1,000 sites, and you only await after that loop? What will happen with open subscription?
Oh, okay, so if you did the loop and you didn't do the await in the loop, like what would happen with 1,000 sites or something, you would have 1,000 objects sitting around in the TPL, in the task pool, and they would do work stealing. So if you have 8 cores, like in case of tasks, you know, like if you do tasks with an I/O completion port, like, or I/O requests, really what's going on is it's ultimately the OS decision to schedule that many network packets on the end drives and whatever. Like, so in that case, it's not really the TPL that controls the parallelism or the number of things that are happening. So at that point, you have to rely on the operating system to do the right thing. But so if you have a for loop that doesn't await any of those guys, of course, you can also not do an I++ thing to say, I've already downloaded 5 sites, like because now they're all going in parallel. So await at the appropriate points. But if you want to do things in parallel, you can do those things like, you know, parallel.foreach and those kind of things. But that's a different topic altogether. Yeah. If you don't await... Oh, if you don't await in that loop here, is that the question?
Oh, not in a parallel for each,
but no, in a regular one. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. If you don't await here, well, you couldn't put your finger on the HTML to begin with. So like in that case, like if you don't await here, I don't know how to write this code even. Like yeah, I don't have the HTML. I can't add it to my list. Like yeah. So you have to wait in that case. There was another question. Yep.
That's, for example, assume that you are going to save the file.
Yep.
And, okay. Now you can also do that
asynchronously. Okay, so when do you take the decision to go asynchronously? The answer is going forward, you won't have synchronous options anymore. Like on Windows 8, Windows Runtime, there's no synchronous save option. You have to do it asynchronously. Because that's the way we guarantee your touch is fluid and everything is responsive. So, you know, the choice to make synchronous versus asynchronous will be you won't have a synchronous option anymore. So that sort of answers the question. Yeah.
What will happen when you use this on a web page?
Uh-huh. when you use async on a web application, basically you're yielding control to the, you know, the IIS web request pool or whatever the facility is that your web request comes on. And you know what ASP.NET does when you actually get a request, it associates, you know, the outgoing response stream with the synchronization context object. So you're actually sitting on something that handles the incoming request. You do some await because you want to do something. That means the current thread is free to do other requests, right? But the synchronization context is kept, so when the await comes back, you schedule a new thread pool to basically talk to the response stream of your client. And so actually, if you would do it synchronously, you would basically have only as many threads or any number of web requests that you could have threads for. Now, basically, when you're in an await for some network I/O or something, that's the point that web request thread can just do something else. And so because the await flows the synchronization context and security context and all of that stuff, you can just do it in like an asynchronous web handler. And No, the response will actually be sent back when the await is done. Like, you know, when your entry method to the web request will have to run all the way to the end before the response. Well, you can stream the response. Like, if you got your hands on the response object and you start sending bytes, yes, you can. But, like, if you have some web method and you have some async stuff that you're doing, like, typically, you know, you can only send things back after the await is done because you're doing some other requests to get the answer for the user, right? But so, yeah, you can put your hands on the web request object, start talking to it, but as soon as that whole workflow, that async workflow ends, you're at the very end, at that point, you know, the web request is closed, and that would be a flush of the buffers and all of that stuff. But yeah, so the answer is, like, if today you have a void handler that takes in an HTTP request and a response object, make it async and talk to it and use await inside. Should just work. And your web server should be tremendously more scalable, because you're not blocking anymore and sort of killing worker threads of the web server. Yeah. Okay, I'm actually 1:47 over time. So there was still some more stuff to show, but so I will actually schedule a sequel for Tech Days next year. maybe one more question, one more. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So the question is, how do you report progress for those long-running operations? The answer is, we have a new interface called iProgress. And so the pattern will be that if you have an async method, first of all, you name it async, so you give it an async suffix, you make it return task of T, you optionally take in a cancellation token if you can do cancellation, and you optionally pass in an iProgress object on which you can signal progress back. So that's the pattern. Cancellation token, progress, both of those are optional. Return a task of T, name the method async. So that's sort of the, should I use that word? Well, yes, why not? It's the threesome of types that sort of flows through the whole thing, like, you know, cancellation, progress, and the task object. Okay? Okay, with that, I'm actually at the end. I might do some blog posts or something at some point about some more interesting stuff here, or update my next version of the book with some async insights. And, you know, if you liked it, please tell the organizers, and then we can do a sequel next year and, you know, look at some more fancy stuff. Thanks very much for your attention, and hope you enjoy it.